and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I am your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page, as well as inviting your comments and suggestions to me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And if you wish to go on the website homepage, you can leave a voicemail message by clicking on the voicemail icon to the right of the homepage. So, with great pleasure, we welcome to the microphone on today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, Dr. Stephen Windmuller, Professor Emeritus at the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in Los Angeles, former Executive Director of the Jewish Federation in Albany, New York, an Executive Director of the JCRC in Los Angeles, and the head of and founder of and major domo of the Wind Report, which is Dr. Windmuller's blog and website. So hi, Dr. Windmuller, nice of you to join us here. Thank you for joining us on this edition of Seekers of Meaning. How you doing?
Thank you, Rabbi. It's great to be with you and with your audience.
Well, and to do the Philadelphia thing, because we're outside of Philly, you got your PhD at Penn, right?
That is correct.
Cool. So welcome back. Welcome home.
Thank you.
Welcome home.
I truly enjoyed my time at the University of Pennsylvania. That was an extraordinary experience.
Well, it's a good school. Good school. And I don't know whether you've been back, but the whole campus is so different now. It's really cool. So first of all, talk to me about the Wind Report, because it's a really great blog and site. And we're going to put the information about it on the website on jewishsacredaging.com as this podcast posts. So, Steve, what is the Wind Report?
Well, Richard, it's a device that I created some years ago, and it has just most recently, I would say, frankly, in the last week, been upgraded. www.thewindreport.com is a collection of my writings, blogs, speaking engagements, and other information related to the research I do, which is really in three or four principal areas: Jewish communal trends, American anti-Semitism, Jewish political behavior, and to some degree, some Jewish economic forecasting, if you wish, sort of looking at trends in the economy and those implications, or the core implications for the American Jewish community.
So one of the trends that I really wanted to pick your brain on is something you wrote in May, last month, in, I don't know whether it was E-Jewish Philanthropy, which I think it was, having to do with a recent study on the demographic trends of the Jewish community of the state of California, which is a bellwether in many ways, having spent the first 6 years of my rabbinate in California. And one of the fascinating things that directly relates to the work that we're doing in Jewish Sacred Aging and for much of our audience is this reality on that trend that you wrote about and the implication of the aging of the Jewish community of California, which is going to be reflected around the country. It is being reflected around the country. Could you just comment on that study and what you wrote and the potential implications of that for the Jewish communal life?
Yes, this May's piece having to do with these trends that focused on aging, but also focused on really some of the other challenges facing Jewish communities, both here in California, but as you suggest, even have national implications. So the bottom line here is that California, as with many other states, is seeing an increasing aging in-place community, and the decline of incoming or in-migration of younger and newer sort of workforce people into the economy. And the effect of this, of course, is to create new pressures on the institutions that serve the aging, be they in the Jewish community or beyond, and to create challenges for our institutions in terms of the financial viability of institutions when you have a smaller cohort of donors, members, and participants. What then will be the effect on federations, synagogues, and other institutions that sustain Jewish life, both here in California and across the nation. And I cite as well some additional data having to do with the decline in the number of children that are both being born and that are coming into the state, meaning where their families have made job opportunities, job choices to come to the West or to California in particular. And there again, we see declines that have implications for religious education, for our day schools and camps. And a third factor is certainly the tax structures of states such as California, and where we see out-migration of seniors and others in the middle class who are looking for economies that are more friendly to them, whether it's Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, or Florida, as examples, states that will make their dollars go further as an aging population sort of assesses its best financial needs and options. All of these factors are contributing to the changing character of what I see happening in this state, as is reflected in the article that was posted in May.
Yeah, in the work that we do at Jewish Sacred Aging, we monitor this all over the place. And as I travel around the states and even in Canada, where these trends are just so obvious. But I'd like to ask you, given the fact that you study these trends, it doesn't seem that the organized Jewish community, the institutional Jewish community, which itself is under transition, is really either prepared or seems to be able to deal with this new reality of that this is, well, according to our statistics, at least 25% of the American Jewish community are over the age of 65. Am I misstating this, or are you seeing a greater attempt on the part of the institutional Jewish community to really begin substantively to deal with this issue?
Well, sadly, Richard, I think you're absolutely correct. I think the institutional world is still trying to catch up with some of these new realities and demographic trends. The best sort of implication of this is already being seen in small cities, especially in the Midwest and South, where the declines have already occurred and where the numbers of those left behind, if you wish, sort of speak to the issues of how does the organized or established institutions of the Jewish community respond to these patterns or trends. So only a few communities have been proactive, and I cite in the particular article that you referenced a couple of southern communities that have actually moved to create some proactive interventions, that is to encourage younger families to come into their communities by giving them grants and assistance, or by creating other initiatives designed to help sort of grow these smaller and aging communities. The other possibility here is that we might begin to see, as we have in American history, some forms of revivalism. That is, for the past 70 years, we've basically seen the slow and emerging sort of decline of American religious institutions, and all kinds of factors are contributing to that. And every so often, we have seen in American history religious revivalism. Well, are we due for one of those kinds of introductions to changing culture and changing patterns of affiliation and organizing? A second factor is we do not yet know the impact of the rise of sort of the politics of hate that we're seeing in this nation, and what will be the effect of that in generating a larger and more focused return to community, to support of synagogues and other institutions. And the third factor are the millennials. Will they come back into community? Will they be funders? Will they be present to assist and become a kind of bridge to supporting seniors and an aging community? But the organized community itself has not formally addressed these questions, nor has it taken a look at what it may need to do to prepare for the next 25 to 40 years where all of these issues will become that much more profound in terms of their impact. An aging community, decline of institutions, and a changing generational pattern of affiliation and participation.
You've written a lot about this on the trends. There's an article, I think, from 2017 and another one from this year, 2019, on which I think you called the New Jewish Marketplace.
Yes.
And you alluded to this in that, you know, in Amcha or in rabbinic conversation, you know, at conventions and meetings, and even in the press, we see this term, the fee-for-service Judaism, which I guess is, I imagine you've studied some of this shift in the way people relate to the organized community as well. And could you unpack a little bit about this? Because you alluded to this in the previous answer. And specifically also in that concept, do you think this rise in domestic anti-Semitism is going to drive people back to the shul?
Okay, so unpacking these questions, I agree that what we are witnessing is so-called privatized Judaism, where individuals are making choices about what they want, how they want it, and where they want it. As a result, community has become much more a choice of individual selection rather than institutional offerings. People are defining today by their actions what they are willing to buy or purchase in the community. So the fee-for-service model is increasingly giving sort of voice to these individualized choices, where people select what they are willing to buy or participate in and wish to opt out of maybe more generalized membership or affiliation and participation. So we see this selective Judaism emerging that is much more a dominant characteristic of the moment. How that will play out over time may certainly change how synagogues and community organizations sort of reach constituencies and respond to their economies of choice or priorities. The possibilities of sort of changing that or correcting this sort of pattern of the decline of formal and natural affiliation to communities and institutions can be seen in the idea of, well, what is the impact of anti-Semitism? What is potentially the impact of the return of millennials, as I suggested earlier, to community building? These are unknowns, but they are potentially in a 21st century environment that is very different from the past experiences of the American Jewish community. If the 20th century was about collective engagement, responsibility, and participation, then is the 21st century something about the rediscovery of a lot of those sort of core ingredients, which may take a generation or two to reimagine for themselves what community may look like, how it will work, what synagogues will become in a new environment in which there are possibilities that outside threats will drive people to seek community for the sake of a sense of safety, affiliation, and belief that only the collective voice of the community can be protective and enhancing their interests.
You put a lot of stock on the millennial generation, which seems to be experimenting with different variations on community. I was at a Sid Schwartz conference in the fall where there was a really interesting collection of millennials who are involved in all kinds of different startups, Jewish startups, from little chevras in cities to social groups to social justice groups, all being organized in May, seeking a different type of community, but very much operating in sort of like an independent sphere. And I know you have some of that in Los Angeles, but do you see this as a major trend, or do you see sort of like eventually with the trend to older and people getting married later and having children later, et cetera, eventually, you know, the 28-year-old, when they get to be 38 and have a kid or two, are going to be winding up joining Temple Israel?
Well, it's certainly possible and most likely probable. But what we are, as you correctly point out, I think since 1985, we have seen this extraordinary rebirth or growth of startups. Hundreds literally have been created since the mid-1980s. And they have created a different kind of sort of boutique American Jewish experience.
Good. I like which, that.
Thank you. No, and which is in many ways defined by the same characteristics we spoke about earlier, meaning individual choice, selective connections. There are core issues that drive young people, whether it's social justice, it's the environment, whether it may be some connection to Israel. Maybe it's associated with a particular Jewish textual pathway or study, but it's always usually very much linear in focus. So it's not very broad in collecting and embracing a lot of voices and participants. It's very very specialized and highly individualized. I think the interesting thing is why this has happened. And what does it all mean? So it happens in 1980s precisely because this is the moment in which American Jews are transferring wealth from the sort of greatest generation, the Second World War folks and those that had preceded them, to the generations that are now clearly removed from that era, who have a very different view of community, of identity, and of Judaism. And thus, what we see as a result of this beginning of the transfer of great wealth is the creation of family foundations, of community foundations that are growing and have grown at very rapid rates, and the new distributions of where dollars are going. Instead of going to central addresses such as federations, they are going from these community-based foundations and individual donors to startups to answer the question, will my grandchildren be Jewish? And if so, what might it look like? And what would we need? And the very first experiment in this is Birthright Israel. Mm-hmm. This did not grow out of the federations or the State of Israel. It came out of the family foundations, the big three, who created this sort of framework of saying, we're going to try an alternative way to make out of Americans or out of Jewish Americans, highly committed and potentially caring Jews. And the whole array of institutional change that begins all occurs in part as a result of this infusion and change of how wealth is distributed and maintained. And the second characteristic to this boutique revolution is really about the emergence of a generation, as we've spoken about, that thinks very differently about how they balance or negotiate their Judaism with all of their other identities and connections. And to the credit of Rabbi Sid Schwartz and others who have begun to sort of look at these groups, study them, and work with them, you see a lot of these alternative expressions. Some of these will die off. Others will merge with legacy institutions. And still others will play a role for that 38-year-old with a child, which gives him or them as a family, opportunities to participate in ways that are not at the moment necessarily available through JCC synagogues or other traditional forms of community expression. So we are in a transitional phase where I would suggest some of these alternative or boutique institutions will be the emerging players in sort of partnership and sometimes in competition with some of the legacy institutions that we have created 100, 150 years ago.
We're speaking with Dr. Stephen Windmuller, emeritus professor at HUCJR in Los Angeles and the former executive director of the Jewish Federation of Albany, as well as the former executive director of JCRC in Los Angeles and the founder and director of the Wind Report, which is a composite online repository of an organic of his writings and speaking engagements. Steve, you alluded to in the last response about Israel. I got to ask you, as you study the American Jewish community and the trends, the impact of anti-Semitism, the political ramifications of our community, I'm sure you run across that what is being reported as this interesting shift in identification and support of Israel. And is it all on, is there a breakdown along generational lines, as some of the popular press is telling us? What's going on with this affiliation, support, and identification with the state of Israel?
Well, I think you're going to have to invite me back just for a seminar or conversation on the Israel-American equation in terms of how Jews see themselves. But bottom line, there are some major shifts, especially younger American Jews, according to Pew and other studies that have taken a look at attitudes toward and about Israel. We see a sort of diminution, a minimizing of the impact of Israel on American Jewish identity and participation, and that we see this broken down in any number of ways, that American Jewish Orthodox participants are much more highly committed to and engaged with the state of Israel and travel in much larger frequency to Israel, and that level of relationship and engagement decreases as you move through the denominational movements, but also as you move through the age cohorts. That is, older American Jews tend to be much more committed to and connected with Israel than their grandchildren, let us say. And so those patterns are also reflected in some of the voting behaviors of American Jews as well. Where does Israel fit into their attitudes about the importance of the Jewish state in American politics? How do they view candidates with the Israel sort of connection or card in mind? And it varies, once again, depending on the level or connectivity, if you wish, of Jews to the state of Israel. So it's clearly changing. It will clearly be an interesting marker in the 2020 election as we watch how the Israel relationship will be portrayed, both by the candidates, but also how American Jews themselves will react to that.
I worked for over three decades for the Union for Reform Judaism, and grew up as a Reform Jew, and took great pride in some of the major accomplishments of this denomination. And now we're seeing, from what we're being told and from the anecdotal evidence of what many of my colleagues tell me, another shift in the trend towards denominations. We did a podcast a couple of months ago with Jack Wertheimer on his book, The New American Judaism, where he, in that book, talks about denominations. And as somebody who studies the trends of the community, I'm very interested in your analysis of the shift now in the presence and power, in quotes, of the denominational structure of American Judaism. Is it on its way out?
It's certainly being challenged, and it is certainly at the moment in a type of free fall situation. And this is certainly maybe more evident with United Synagogue than any other movement. I have for some time been suggesting that liberal American Judaism in all of its shades, renewal, reconstructionism, reform, and conservative, may need to rethink their relationship one to the other. Part of this is as much about being able to manage more efficiently and probably effectively the interests of liberal American Jews and what it may mean to be a Jewish, religiously progressive or liberal person in the 21st century. So that part of this is structural, part of it is ideological, meaning how do we rethink the proposition about being a practicing Jewish, progressive or liberal, religiously, politically, and culturally in the 21st century. And that will require some attention on the part of the institutional Jewish world to sort of take a look at where we are. I mean, there's no doubt that American Orthodoxy is thriving. Whether that will continue is difficult to define and determine at the moment. But in terms of the viability of that movement and or the various movements within American Orthodoxy, I should say, is particularly exciting and needs to be monitored and understood. Where I run into some difficulties with Professor Wertheimer and his book is that he is, in my mind, still very much engaged in separating or demarcating different liberal Jewish expressions and having some criticism to offer of the Tikkun Olam prospects, for example, that are being identified as a way by some Jew, by the activism of some Jews in terms of how they identify. And he seems to minimize that as not being authentic or adequate. And I think one builds from where people are rather than in legislating what they ought to be or to become. And so my sense is that American Judaism is at a very precise and necessary moment for revisiting all of these definitional questions about how we enhance the voice of liberal Judaism in the American context and redefine what it may represent to American Jews in this changing period.
Yeah, I know in his book he does take a little knock against the Reform movement's of worship of, if that's the right word, of Tikkun Olam. Be that as you in one of your WIN reports from about a year and a half ago, a little bit more than that, in January of 2018, you wrote an article, It's Time to Rethink Liberal Judaism, and you lay out your call for a collective conversation, saying that the previous sort of like competitive marketplace doesn't work anymore. Are you saying that you would be in favor, and you alluded to this at the beginning of the last response, I think, but really to hone in on this, the time has come for these denominations, the leaders, to all sit down around a table and say, these are the issues that we're facing. We have a bit greater strength together rather than trying to compete with each other.
Exactly.
Okay. Do you think that's a possibility of happening in the next couple of years? Realistically?
Doubtful.
We still do a lot of silo and turf war stuff.
Absolutely.
And even on the local level, I mean, you know, one of the biggest complaints and concerns I have as I travel with colleagues is that old thing, well, this congregation doesn't talk to that congregation and this federation doesn't talk to that congregation and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One of the other trends that I wanted to ask your opinion about before we start running out of time is the impact of this the impact of the acceptance of interfaith marriage and interfaith families within the corpus of liberal Judaism. That's a reality now. I don't think you can argue that's part of who we are as a Jewish community in the United States. What do you see the short-term and long-term impact of this reality?
I think on the short term, we are still, unfortunately, dealing with some pushback and some resistance to welcoming the stranger, for lack of a better terminology. And that's a challenge of changing the culture and the policies associated with welcoming folks into American Judaism. Much more to the longer term issue will be the reality that American Judaism will be highly diversified, meaning we will be multicultured people. We will have far fewer of our Jewish participants having generational histories of Judaism, meaning that the marketplace is bringing to us men and women who are coming into Judaism from all kinds of worlds, the unchurched, very religious experiences, and a diversity of ethnicities, so that it is no longer going to be a Judaism that sort of naturally has an understanding of its history and of its pulse of what life and culture was about at any point, you know, past the last few minutes, and to be sort of crass about it. Therefore, it will change how, in fact, we speak to and talk about the Jewish experience, or Judaism and its history, or the history of the State of Israel, or the culture of Jewish living in various parts of the world, because all of that will be unknowns to the folks that will be the recipients and consumers of American Judaism in the second half of the 21st century, because this will be a new religion for literally thousands of folks who are coming to us because they either love their partner, they love us as a faith tradition, or that they have become part of a world that are seekers and that are looking at and studying various religious pathways and currently are looking at Judaism as one such option.
It's sort of like, it sounds like, I just finished the David Brooks book, The Second Mountain. And there's a very long chapter in there where he basically replicates exactly what you're talking about. You know, born a Jew, but really at a home in many ways with his wife's Christian faith, second marriage, and trying to find, in essence, a balance of how to negotiate both identities and make it work within the contemporary American society. As somebody who, you know, is committed to the synagogue as still the major central institution, are our synagogues prepared for this transition? Because the implication of which is what you're saying, all of which I think is true, my sense is, well, let me ask, are our synagogues, the way they're currently constituted, prepared for this huge change and shift in reality?
I would doubt that most of them really are. Part of this also will be about not only the training of our rabbinic and clergy leadership, but it will also be about the retuning or education of our boards and core stakeholders in how we manage, welcome, and embrace the changes that are going to occur structurally and demographically, culturally, and certainly in terms of religious expression or performance of what we are trying to articulate. So yeah, we have a lot of work to do in preparing for what lies ahead.
Are HUC and JTS, and based upon your studies and knowledge, or RRC, are they handling this? Are they dealing with this at all? And they, you know, this is a world in which you're going out in, students, you've got to be prepared to deal with this.
I think the irony here is that in this environment, it is the students who are now entering the seminaries who are telling their faculties and the leaderships of these different administrations. This is the world in which I'm coming into, and their own stories, that is, being Jews by choice or being you know, somehow coming into Judaism through not the traditional nifty camping youth movements or religious educational frames, they're telling that story to the leadership of our seminaries. And I think that is, in fact, the sort of the impetus, or that will be the impetus for changing curriculum and changing sort of focus of how we prepare the next generation.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of looking at the future in somewhat of an optimistic way of saying that, you know, as you've been alluding to, this is, as we call it, the age of transition. And the Judaism that's going to emerge as this generation of colleagues matures is going to be radically different than the world in which I walked out of HUC, let's say in 1972, and walked into a congregation. And that's how we've survived, hasn't it? I remember this lesson from my professor at HUC in Cincinnati, Dr. Rifkin, all of a shalom, who basically said, we've survived by adapting and innovating.
Yeah.
And to the new world.
And Ellis Rifkin was extraordinary in leaving us both through his limited writings, but nonetheless important, as well as those of you who were his students, in understanding this principle of the adaptability
right.
of communities and individuals to these changes.
Well, I still remember his dialectic triangle of survival, preservation, adaptation, and innovation. And if you study Jewish history, and you're alluding to it, he's 100% right. He was a gift. He was one of the great teachers that I had the honor of studying with. He was brilliant. Dr. Stephen Windmuller, thank you very, very much for your time, your expertise, your insights into what is a fascinating time in Jewish history. It's very alive. It's very organic. And in many ways, it's fun to be along for the ride. And let's see how it goes. And I thank you for your leadership. The Wind Report, your blog and digest of writings and speaking engagements, will have all the Wind Report contact information on Jewish Sacred Aging. You can go to the Seekers of Meaning site, a part of the Jewish Sacred Aging homepage. All the information will be on there. So we'll continue to monitor that. And again, Steve, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Take care. Good luck. Continued success.
I appreciate it. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Take care, man. And say hello to my friends in LA, see Bill Cutter and the group. Tell them I said hi, will you?
Okay, very well. Thank you.
To all of you, thank you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to me, rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com, and also invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. We appreciate your continued support as well of our work, and if you would like to make a tax-exempt donation to help further the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these Seekers of Meaning podcasts, we invite you to go to our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and click on the donate icon. You'll find that on the top of the page, and we greatly appreciate your support. Seekers of Meaning is recorded at the studios of Lubetkin Global Media here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and we thank our producer, Steve Lubetkin. Thank you again for listening. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next Seekers of Meaning. Shalom.